It is impossible to overestimate the importance of those who work with young people. Sunday school teachers, youth workers, Christian school teachers, they all have an invaluable role in molding the spiritual lives of the next generation. As important as this work is, it is vital that all those who minister to young people have as many legal safeguards as possible. Let's join attorney David C. Gibbs III as he presents methods of effectively ministering to today's young people.
9 ways to minister more effectively to children today. And boy, if there's a ministry that's ever needed, it's your ministry. You know, we at the Christian Law Association believe that you as a Sunday school teacher, you as a children's worker, you as a youth pastor are doing more to help save America than a congressman. Oh, you say, wait a minute, Brother Gibbs, the congressmen have all that elected power. Can I tell you something? You have all that spiritual power. And you're molding lives. Boy, the congressman can only pass laws and set police in place to enforce them. But you can literally, with the power of the Lord, transform young people. You can make them different. You're doing more to save America than the Supreme Court. You're doing more to help save America than any of the lawyers that go to court. We're honored as legal missionaries to, every week of our lives, be in defending and fighting for the rights of God's people in the courts. But they come up and say, is CLA the answer? No. CLA has the privilege of defending the answer. And you people and your ministry, what you're doing through your local churches, what you're doing in your own families, as you minister to the young people. You know, statistically, it's overwhelming the number of people who trust Christ. I think it's like 80% that ever trust Christ do so before they turn 18. Your ministry is fertile ground to go in and literally mold those young people. And then the neat thing about converting a young child to Jesus Christ, they have their whole life ahead of them. And they're able to do so many things and to invest. I'm excited when somebody gets saved on a deathbed. I'm excited when somebody gets saved in a nursing home. But I always look and say, you know, I bet you they have regret that they weren't able to use their life more for Christ. And yet here, we have the opportunity in dealing and ministering with children to put a thumbprint on a life that can go out and have a fruitful service for the Lord Jesus Christ. Look with me, if you would, at point number one. Point number one to effectively ministering to children is understanding your ministry to children has never, underscore the word never, been more important. Your ministry to children has never been more important. You can look at the statistics and it floors you. 30%+ of young people in high school will have smoked last month. You can look at the statistics of the number of children who cheat and the number of children who steal and all the burdens these kids are carrying. Boy, in New York City alone, they're estimating that 50,000. Don't let that number escape you. 50,000, like a city, of children were born with AIDS. Here, this disease, it just takes away your life, and that's how they're born into this world. And, well, we're watching our country slide and deteriorate. The problems I faced as a young person pale in comparison to what our young people today face. They have these mind-altering drugs. I mean, not something that just kind of rushes through, but I mean, literally that scars them and addicts them for life. The gangs, the peer pressures, the things they see, the violence on television. Your ministry has never been more important. You say, oh, Brother Gibbs, but you don't understand. What I'm doing isn't really making a difference. The kids I'm ministering to, maybe it's in the Christian school, maybe it's in the Sunday school. Really, those kids, I'm doing my best, Brother Gibbs, but I'm just telling you, really, I'm wasting my time. And don't raise your hand, but if you minister to children long enough, the devil does that to you. He tries to discourage you. He tries to make you think, boy, what I'm doing isn't making a difference. What I'm doing isn't really needed. What I'm doing isn't really having an impact. Could I tell you, those are nothing more than lies from the devil himself. Your ministry, what you've been called to do in ministering to young people, has never been more important than today. And can I tell you something? You're looking at a man that owes his whole ministry to people just like you. You say, what do you mean you owe it to me? You've been people just like you, from the nursery workers right on into the Sunday school teachers, the Christian day school teachers, the youth pastors, people just like you grafted themselves into my life. And because of the investment of people, your counterparts, I have a ministry today. You know, we at the Christian Law Association are beginning to get second-generation Christians, kids that grew up in church or kids that went to Christian school and are now out and through law school and serving God. And we're now representing pastors in their second generation and Christian leaders in their second generation. Your ministry is making an incredible difference. As you know, I wanted to go to law school and serve with my dad in this ministry. And I went to Christian day school from a conservative church background, went to Bible college, then wanted to go to law school. And law school was a little bit of a scary world for me because here you're going into an unsaved heathen environment. And as most people know, lawyers don't have a reputation for being the nicest of people to be around. And this is where they train them. And I was looking at all the different law schools and I applied off to Duke University Law School. Got accepted back. And that was really a nice honor that they would, it's a very good law school and that they would ask me to come be part of their class. And then I read the fine print. The tuition to go to school there was $20,000 a year. And law school's a 3-year process. Now, I wasn't a math major, but it didn't take me long. $20,000 times 3 was $60,000. Then on top of that, you had to eat. And I had no plans for a 3-year fast. I was looking to eat and find a place to live. And what they said is you really need to budget double that. And I thought, my goodness, I mean, most of the neighborhoods I know, the houses don't cost that much. And here's what they want to do for school. So I told my dad, I said, Dad, you know, Duke accepted me, but I really won't be able to go there. It's very, very expensive. And he said, well, son, and you know how dads do this. Are there any scholarships? Maybe the Lord could do something for you. And then I like a dad to kind of spiritualize things on you. I was like, Dad, you don't understand. You know, these are not nice people. This is an unsaved school. And here I'm a Christian school graduate from a conservative church and through a Bible college. They're not going to find anything in me that they're going to want to say, we'll scholarship you to come to our school. He said, well, you ought to just apply. So against my better judgment, I went ahead, filled out the paperwork and sent it off and thought, well, that'll be the end of it. Got word back that Duke wanted me to come down for a interview of sorts. I thought, boy, that's going to be a waste of time. They probably sent that out to a lot of people. They'd rather tell you no face to face. They're probably hoping you don't show up. And so I told my dad, I don't think I should go. He said, no, I think you should go. Maybe the Lord will do something through it. Drove to Durham, kind of convinced I was doing something futile. And I was in the car alone, and you know how you have these thoughts. I began weighing in my mind, do I tell them the politically correct things that they want to hear? Or do I really tell them the truth about who I am and what I believe? And you know, you can, these people aren't hard. The liberals are easy to, you know, you say things like you're for world peace and you're against the environment going bad and you're dedicated to humanity. And yeah, you can say some things that would tickle their ears. And the Lord convicted me and said, no, David, you need to remember who you are. That you're my child, you're my ambassador, you're my son, and I'll take better care of you than if you go down there and try to please men. Sitting in this room to be interviewed, first question. Mr. Gibbs, if you come to this law school and we give you this fully paid scholarship, what is it that you intend to do with your life? I said, I intend to be a legal missionary. They said, a legal what? We know all about lawyers and we've heard of missionaries, but nobody's ever mixed them up before. I said, well, what I want to do is go with my father and represent churches and Christians who are sued for the biblical faith, and we do it for no charge. We do it for free. And I thought when we said that, a few of the other lawyers almost passed out. They had never heard of this concept in a law school. And my little interview went on for almost an hour and a half. And when it was all said and done, I was sure I had thoroughly irritated every person there. But they'd all gotten a clear plan of salvation. Any one of them could have been saved that wanted to. I was talking to my dad later. I was a little smug. He said, "How'd it go?" I said, "Awful." "And it was your idea." Now they're mad at me. And they're probably going to reject me and withdraw my letter. And they now know exactly who I am, a Bible-believing Christian committed to what I want to do with my life. And Dad said, "Well, let's just wait and see. Maybe the Lord will do something." And I thought to myself, he's the only one. I've messed this up pretty bad. A few weeks later, strange event. My dad was home. He's almost never there. He travels a lot. And he picked up the telephone. It was Duke Law School. The person on the phone said, "Mr. Gibbs, let us congratulate you. Your son is receiving the one fully paid scholarship to come to our school this year." Now, my dad did something foolish at that point. He'd heard from me how bad it went. And what he should have done is taken that phone and put it down before they could reconsider anything. But his response was, "What? How in the world did that happen?" The person calling went on to give a testimony to people just like you. She said, "Mr. Gibbs, let me explain that we at Duke can fill our school without hardly even trying. We'll get thousands upon thousands upon thousands of applications from around the world. The best minds, the brightest students, the highest test scores." She said, "From all those thousands, we're trying to fill a class of about 160. She said, "We can find people with bright minds." She said, "You know, in all our time here at Duke, you can really count on one hand the number of people we've seen who came through this law school and showed any character." And she said, "Your son came down here and said a lot of unusual things. But he showed that different kind of character." And she said, "I'm still not quite sure what a legal missionary is. But," she says, "I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to be one." My friend, the world is looking for that character. That ability to put within the young people what I call the backbone of knowing what is right and what is wrong. And because of you, or people just like you, I have a ministry, and literally millions of other people around the world are serving Jesus Christ because you took the time to invest that character, that training. You say, "I don't know if it's doing any good. Can I help you?" I guarantee you, I frustrated a few of my teachers. Few of my Sunday school workers, I put them in early retirement. But they stuck by it. Your ministry to children has never been more important than it is today. Number two. Different kinds of children need you in different ways. Different kinds of children need you in different ways. You ever notice how no two kids are the same? I have two children. Never ceases to amaze me how the same mom and dad, I mean, you got the genetic codes, all that should match, and you'll have one child who is just the perfect child. Well-behaved, well-mannered, very bright, doesn't have to study much. You got that child. And you kind of break into your parenting with that child a lot of times, and you think, "Oh, this isn't going to be too bad." Then child number two comes. And all the strengths of child number one somehow skip child number two. And all of a sudden, you're sitting here saying, "What in the world?" And it can go all sorts of different directions, but you can tell from your own family that no two children are the same. You know how that impacts your ministry? Sometimes children's workers fall into what I call assembly line mentality. Cookie cutters. I do it this way, this is how I do it, and all the kids better march through it my way, or I don't have any need to minister to them. And yet to be successful, to do your ministry particularly well, to do it effectively, it's important for you to understand there are different kinds of children who need you differently. What you do with one won't always work with another one. Cute story, a Christian school principal called home to talk to the parents, and little fella picked up the telephone and said, "Hello?" And the principal said, "Is your mother there?" Little fella says, "Yes." He says, "Well, can I speak to her?" He said, "No, she's very busy." He said, "Oh." He said, "Well, is your father there?" "Yes." "Can I speak to him?" "No, he's very busy also." He said, "Was anybody else there?" "The firemen are here." He said, "The firemen are there. Can I speak to one of them?" "No, they're busy." He said, "Anybody else there?" "Policemen are here." He said, "The policemen? Can I speak to one of them?" "No, they're busy too." Finally, this poor principal about had it. He said, "What in the world are all these people so busy doing?" Little fella said, "They're all looking for me." Different kinds of children need you in different ways. Number three. An informed parent is your best friend, your best legal defense. We say, "Wait a minute, Brother Gibbs, there's a little problem here. If I tell the parents what we're really doing, they may not let the kids come. I mean, if I go out on bus calling, or if I go out visiting, or if the parents knew we were letting the kids do all this rowdy, rambunctious stuff at youth parties, or if they knew how we ran junior church, or if they understood how Sunday school operated, they'd be upset." Now, if that thought's ever gone through your mind, your little legal antenna need to jump up, because that is a lawsuit waiting to happen. When you say, "I know the parents won't like this." You say, "Well, wait, the reason we do that, Brother Gibbs, is we know the kids like it." How many understand the kids sometimes like things the parents don't? All right? The kids don't get sued. You get sued. And part of your ministry is more or less having an open book. Parent wants to come observe. Terrific. A parent wants to come volunteer. Fantastic. Parent wants to chat with you about it. Wonderful. An informed parent is your best friend or your best legal defense. Because you want to know why? If they know what's going on and still let the kid come, they have next to no case against you. But a lot of children's workers get what I call a little secretive, or they don't quite want to open up with what's really going on. An informed parent. Please remember in the law, they're not your children. Number four. A signed permission slip is your best defense. And this one's really quite simple. A signed permission slip shows that you indeed had parental permission for what you wanted to do. The two areas where this one becomes a major issue for you to be aware of are in terms of attending activities, including church, and number two, baptism. Number one, attending activities, and number two, baptism. Those are major areas where parental consent, parental permission, can lead to liability if you don't have it. And so you need these signed permission slips. We say, "Well, that's a hassle, or that's a bother, or that's a trouble." Let me give you the case they like to put out. They say, your child comes to you and says, "Mom, I'd like to go to this pizza party. And it's held somewhere in town." And you're a loving mother, but you're a little busy. And you say, "Well, who are you going with?" And you say, "Well, it's a couple of the friends here in this neighborhood. You know the other kids." And the mother says, "Okay, you're going for the pizza party. That's great." And the child's gone a few hours and comes back. And the mother says, how was it? Did you enjoy the pizza time? Was that fun? You say, oh, yeah, but let me tell you what, Mom. I just became a Mormon. I mean, not only did I become one, I just got baptized in it. Matter of fact, they gave me another book to go with my Bible. There's a whole separate book. Did you know, Mom, that there's a whole other book of inspiration? And Mom, guess what? You're going to hell unless you do what I just did. All of a sudden, Christian Mom, Christian Dad, you say, hey, wait a minute. I gave you permission to go to a pizza party. I no way, no how gave you permission to go readopt your whole lifelong and family heritage faith. And while you sit here and hear it painted the other way, it troubles you. But yet that's exactly how the unsaved parents perceive it when you take their children. And so it's real important that you understand parental permission is your best friend, but these signed permission slips can be your best defense. It's real tough for you to sue the Mormon church if you signed a permission slip that says, I'm allowing my child to go to the Mormon church for this pizza party, and on there's a little statement of the Mormon faith. You have no case. But you do have a case if your child, under false pretenses, is taken and indoctrinated against your wishes. Number five. Avoid situations where allegations could be made against you or your ministry. Now, this is sort of what I call lawsuit alley. You're a children's worker. You're at risk. This is a high-risk ministry because people are very sensitive about how their children are treated. How many understand children will lie? Anybody here ever had a child lie to them before? Kids on the street discover they might have a $1 million case. Boy, they'll say whatever they need to say. Lawsuits become everybody's favorite lottery ticket. And so in all of that, we have kind of categorized in three main rules. When I say rules, I sort of put it out in terms of this is when your sensitivity, this is when your antenna needs to go off. Your siren needs to say, warning. Right now, I'm in a very risky moment. Right now, things could happen that could hurt me and my ministry. Right now, I need to be super careful. Right now, I need to be watching and trying to figure out how I got into this because I want to get out of it. That's the areas right up here where you have the most trouble. Number one, never be alone with the children. If you're alone with a child, your antenna need to go up. You need to say, wait a minute, this is a risky moment. You're driving them home alone. You're alone with them in a room. You're taking them in a restroom. When you're alone with the children, that moment, you need to be alerted. This is a trouble spot. Number two, do not touch the children below the neck. Do not touch the children below the neck. All of a sudden, you got your hands all over a child. You're hugging all sorts of kids. You're doing things in physical contact with the kids. At that moment, you say, well, wait a minute. We were just roughhousing. Youth pastors have gone to jail for wrestling matches. Well, I was just kind of slapping them and playing around. Your antenna need to go up. Wait a minute. I've got my hands on a child. At that moment, you need to be alerted because that's when allegations are made. That's when lawsuits fly. That's when people's sensitivity goes real high. And then lastly, watch student-to-teacher ratio. Watch student-to-teacher ratio. I'm in a classroom with 200 kids all by myself. Can I handle it? Answer is no. Not effectively. I mean, it's some kind of mob control. You might be able to do it. Have you ever been in a situation where you say, I'm overwhelmed. I can't handle it. Things are getting out of hand. The moment that starts to happen, when the teacher-to-student ratio falls out of sync, your sensitivity needs to go up. You need to get additional workers in and pull it together tighter. These areas, avoid situations where allegations could be made against you or your ministry. Number six. Use discipline methods that work. Use discipline methods that work. You say, well, what do you mean by that? How many of you have ever had a classroom get out of control? You ever had a time where you just say, oh my goodness, I've got trouble here. Well, whether you're highly educated or whether you dropped out of school real early on, When you take on a children's ministry position, you have to have some form of method to maintain discipline that works for you. When you say, I don't have any, then you're in the wrong ministry. You say, well, what method works for everybody? There is none. All the methods, some people can do some funny little things. Man, they got the kids like a magnet. Other people use prizes or quiet seats or other tools. But it's imperative for your ministry before trouble breaks that you have a discipline method that works for you. You say, why do I need to have this method? Because if you don't have it, at some point you will lose your temper and do things you wish you didn't. I've had youth pastors grab kids by the nape of their neck and throw them up on the wall. And I mean, stuff is now all in trouble. And you say, why did you do that? And you say, this kid just got the best of me. And really what happened was that man, that lady, didn't have discipline methods that work. If you can't develop these in your ministry, you will have real trouble. It's imperative that you find out for you what works and then implement them. Number seven, pray for each child individually and specifically. Pray for each child individually and specifically. Can I tell you something? The kids know if you care. The children you minister to know if you care. You say, well, why don't I just pray for my class? How many of you believe there's power in prayer? Do you believe that sitting here? Oh, I sure do. And you say, well, there's no power, there's no success in my class. There's no success in my ministry. The Lord isn't on it, and yet then you don't pray. And you wonder why there's no power, why there's no spiritual vitality to your ministry. It's imperative that as a children's worker, you pray for each child individually and specifically. Can I tell you why? The Lord will miraculously use those prayers and use you to more effectively teach and instruct and work with those children. But it's imperative that you make it a regular prayer and that you don't just... I know a lot of people in their ministry. We at the Christian Law Association handle tens of thousands of matters each year. And we can stand up in our morning devotions and say, pray for the cases. And that's a good prayer request. But that's different than one of our attorneys like Brother Juergen or when some of our staff say, God, help in this situation. I need your help as I'm drafting these documents. And God, help here as we are fighting for this Christian school. And help here as we're fighting for this Christian family. And by name, asking God to intercede and show himself to be God in those cases, there's a difference. And a lot of people lose the power of that specific and individual prayer. Pray for each child individually and specifically. Number eight. Sincerely love every child. Sincerely love every child. I told you the children know if you care. If there's one point I could stress over and over again, kids are magic at perceiving heart. You say, I told them I like them. I told them I could. They can shoot right through that. You don't even have to tell them you like them and they can know whether you do or not. The children can zip through all the things you want to say, all the facade, all the pre... They know whether you're real and they know whether you care. And they can pick that up in a heartbeat. A group of psychologists did a study. This is interesting. Back many years ago in Baltimore. And their whole thing was they were going to find these poor inner city kids. And they were going to track them for 30 years. So all these men and ladies would be in their 40s and 50s. And what they were going to do then is show how because of their poverty, because they were in the inner city ghettos, that they couldn't make anything of their lives. And so the psychologists set up all the studies and the years went by. Then they went and hunted up these people. And they were real upset because the people were all reasonably successful. One fellow was a truck driver. One guy was a medical doctor. One guy had his business. One guy was running a dry cleaner. I mean, they were floored. They were looking for people to be dead or on drugs or in prison. And here all these people were meaningfully in good family relationships and contributing to society. And they went to all these men and they said, how in the world? You're part of our study. Do you remember? And they said, oh, yeah, a long time ago you came around when we were kids. And they all named a certain teacher that worked there in the Baltimore public schools and taught in a local Sunday school. They all named her. This is now 30-plus years later. They said, this is really strange. They've all named this lady. So they went and found, and unbelievably, this lady was still alive in a nursing home, now in her late 90s. And she was reasonably coherent, and they said, ma'am, we need to chat with you if we can, and they explained their study and what they'd done and how successful her students were, and that they all named and remembered her. Just there rocking in her chair, and they said, if you can, I mean, our whole study's been shot. What was the secret of your success with those children? She said, gentlemen, it's really quite simple. Just sitting there rocking in her chair. She said, I loved those boys. I loved those boys. And now all these years later, those boys that she taught in the schools and those boys that she taught in Sunday school now all point back to her. Here, these are people without great educational opportunities going and doing great things. Here's children without a lot of money going out and becoming successful citizens. Here's kids making something of their lives. And they all point to one teacher who said, I loved them. If you want to effectively minister, number 8, sincerely love every child. Sincerely love every child. Number 9, and our final point, don't quit until Jesus comes. Don't quit until Jesus comes. Remember, point 1 was your ministry to children has never been more important. But now number 9, with your ministry being more important, you've been drafted by the Lord Jesus Christ. You say, wait a minute, I volunteered. No, I say, the Scriptures compelled you. You've been drafted to go in the Lord's army and mold these young people. But can I tell you what's sad? We got all sorts of Christian soldiers going AWOL. Packing it up and saying, it's too tough. It's not worth it. And all of a sudden, they're turning and walking away from what they've been called to do. Don't quit. Don't quit. You say, oh, Brother Gibbs, you don't know my kids. They're a mess. I know kids literally around the world, but certainly throughout this country. And ultimately, the Lord will bless your ministry. Boy, case after case I come into and I see situations where literally, without a Sunday school teacher, without a bus worker, without somebody who cared, there are kids that have no hope. You know, I was in Duke Law School there in Durham, and I remember going out with our church and looking at some of these young people. And I mean, there the mom is drunk. The dad isn't even anywhere to be found. They don't have anything. And those little kids would look up at me, just a young law student, and say, you'll come back next week, won't you? You'll come back again, won't you? You're not going to leave us out here where we're... And those little kids are just pleading. You. The devil knows what you're doing is incredible. You're heroes in my eyes. You're heroes in the eyes of heaven. And yet, some people here, you're going to be tempted to quit. The next 6 months, the devil's going to come to you and say, what you're doing isn't doing any good. Please put him aside. Don't quit until Jesus comes. Your ministry's never been more important. How many make a promise to me? Brother Gibbs, I won't quit. Make that promise to me. I won't quit. Do it one more time. I won't quit. With the Lord's help, your greatest days lay ahead. Your ministry's never been more important. These children need you more than ever. And could I plead with you? I'm honored. People say, Brother Gibbs, why don't you go with big law firms? Why don't you go represent Coca-Cola? Why don't... Because I'm representing the best people in the whole world. They're people just like you. They're Sunday school teachers, they're churches, they're pastors. And can I give you my commitment? Till the Lord comes, I'm going to day in, day out, as He gives me health and strength, stand with people just like you and keep your ministries open and keep them free. But would you please keep going?
Because CLA is a faith ministry, the legal work it performs is done at no charge to those helped or defended. You may contact the Christian Law Association by writing to P.O. Box 4010, Seminole, Florida, 33775. That's the Christian Law Association, P.O. Box 4010, Seminole, Florida, 33775. If you wish to call with a legal question or request for materials, our phone number is 813-399-8300. That's 813-399-8300. Again, thanks for listening, and may the Lord bless you richly now and always.